the city of New York are living catacombs, an endless maze of subterranean tunnels, unfit for anything human, unauthorized for anything experimental.
Hold it! There's something moving up ahead in the tunnel!
And unlikely to bring anyone down there. So, they're coming up.
Welcome to the last episode of the podcast that wouldn't die. I'm your host, Kevin. With me, as always, is Aaron.
Hey. Oh, wait, maybe I need to bring my microphone over. Hey.
Sweet Jesus. This week, we'll be discussing the horror classic, Judd, starring Daniel Stern and John Hurt, and it's really an all-star cast. John Goodman's in this very, very briefly. Good times had by all.
John Goodman, Aaron, reprising his role from The Big Easy.
Oh, easily.
And John Hurt was never so young. You forget he was kind of cute in his old days. Although, still showing that no one should wear t-shirts with cut-off sleeves. Once again,
that's the only kind of shirts I wear are sleeveless t-shirts.
I didn't want to say anything, but for sure.
I feel that's a personal attack, Aaron. I'm not going to lie. I'm offended! Now, you were convinced we had already reviewed this movie.
I swear to you, I'm like, why is this still so fresh in my mind? But the book don't lie. It's not in book.
That's what I'm saying.
Not. So why the hell did I watch it?
I think it was on Joe Bob. It was on Joe Bob one season.
All right.
So, I mean, that explains a lot.
Chud
is one of my top of the chart guilty pleasures. I'm not going to lie. I go to the mat for Chud early and often.
I was just talking to my friend Linda. She's like, wait, Chud? You're watching Chud? Cannibalistic Humanoid Underground Dwellers? I was so drunk when we watched that in college. She was telling me the story. And then it was a double feature or something about rabid grannies. Is that a real movie? Because if it is, we got to find that.
Rabid grannies. We will definitely have to dig that out at some point. For God's sakes.
That's got to be comedy gold.
So, Aaron, give us your 30-second synopsis of Chud.
Well, you know, first of all, the government ain't up to no good. Inglewood ain't up to no good. Neither is the government. And because, you know, we got the toxic waste and we got to put it somewhere, why not in the sewer with the homeless people? Seems like a plan. What could go wrong with that? Oh, it go wrong. And then kind of in the middle, I lost interest and just started playing on Instagram.
Oh,
and then
no.
At the end, everybody wins. Yay!
How dare you! had you had seen this before. Do you remember the first time you saw it?
I for sure it was probably a video rental. One of those things where you drink your King Cobra malt liquor with a couple of buddies and you've rented four movies and you watch them all and then just like pass out on your floor at 1:30 in the morning.
I remember fondly, I might add, being in college in the dorms. I would order up a pizza, hit the Blockbuster video, and just luxuriate in a full evening of watching multiple movies, laying in bed, eating pizza. That's how I do, or how I did.
How you did. How you may still do. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if we've grown quite that far.
That's what I'm saying.
That it blows your mind, the very thought of eating pizza in bed watching trash movies.
Oh, no, it is my dream. It is. That's what will happen one day when I'm old and gray.
But because back in the old days, children, it seemed like there were only ever like 10 new movies. So after a while, I've said this all through the pandemic. I've seen everything on Netflix. For sure, back in the day, we had seen everything at Blockbuster. where now you're just renting things because it's a Friday based on just the picture, because you sure as hell never heard of it and don't know any of these actors.
Well, it sounds ridiculous, but in some way, if the movie was in the blockbuster, it had a certain level of quality that you'd expect. Even if it was lousy, it was still kind of blockbuster level lousy. Now, if you're scrolling through Netflix or whatever, you have things that are well below the floor of blockbuster straight-to-video quality. I got to tell you. It's a sad situation.
I think that presumption is wrong. Not about the Netflix. That for sure is true. And the other problem with Blockbuster is they were like this Christian organization or something. So they would edit the films. It's a lot of, it always
is
said
that pan, true, or is that an old wives'
pan,
tale?
No, pan and scan. Pan and scan.
Well, no. That's, you're talking about two different things. Because there's edited for content, which means we took out objectionable scenes or whatever. But most people just had regular old TVs back in the day. They didn't have widescreen TVs. So, well, and
that's true too. But I did remember hearing that. I'm Googling this.
So, pan and scan, most videos you get at Blockbuster or the Warehouse or 99 Cent Video, whatever the case may be, is they were done in pan and scan because the aspect ratio in a movie theater was much wider than a regular TV. So, you could either get what was called letterbox, where they would literally put a black band at the bottom and top of the screen, so you get the full, you know, director's vision. But most normal people, that irritated them, the bars. Right. So they would rather just have the pan and scan, where they would just literally chop off the edges of the picture.
Versus letterbox. If you were a sophisticated person back in the day, you would always look for the letterbox.
That's the only way.
And I just Googled it, and you are correct. They didn't edit it, although they did not carry NC-17.
That is true. Yes.
But what they would do is all movies have these alternate cuts.
Right. So, made for TV versions, basically.
Well, and for different areas.
Not made for TV, but like a TV, you know, edit. At least they used to. I don't know if they still do that.
Right. So, or different countries. So they use alternate edits at times. They did nothing. They just strong-armed the companies to have maybe a less. Although I did rent Boxing Helena at Blockbuster.
It always comes back to Boxing Helena with you.
Someone should have edited that. There should have been some panning and scanning there.
Somebody should edit that out of my memory. I saw Boxing Helena in the theater. For God's sakes. What was I thinking?
We're going to review that.
We are absolutely not reviewing Boxing Helena.
Wasn't it Helena Bonham Carter and Julian Sands at their finest?
No, it was not Helena. You think she... No, the Helena of Boxing Helena was not Helena Bonham Carter. It was Sherilyn Fenn.
Ooh.
Sherilyn Fenn of Twin Peaks fame.
Yes. And she was briefly on Gilmore Girls.
And what was the, I mean, she was, what was it? Two Moon Junction was her big thing back in the day.
She was striking. She was
beautiful.
Striking beauty.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. What was Boxing Helena, Julian Sands is in love with Sherilyn Fenn. She gets into a car accident and he has to lop off one of her legs. It's kind of a misery type situation because he was.
It was whittling her down piece by piece.
Something like by the end, she doesn't have any arms or legs.
She's just a torso and a head.
But then by the end, she's kind of in love with him now. Well, if I remember this correctly.
She's got limited choices at that point.
All the quadriplegics who are listening, she does not represent my view. I love my quadriplegics.
I thought you were going to say, don't put quadriplegics in boxes. And just because you're quadriplegic doesn't mean you don't have arms and legs, FYI.
Well, I want to expand it to everyone who just doesn't have the full use of their limbs. So that I see you and I appreciate you. God.
But what did it add to their senses? So because she lost her arms and legs, would she then be psychic or have super hearing?
No. That wouldn't happen at all. But thank you. But another little interesting side plot of Boxing Helena saga is originally the role that went to Sherilyn Fenn was going to be played by Kim Basinger.
Whoa.
And she verbally agreed to do it and then backed out. And then the filmmaker sued her for like $10 million. And I think they won because it was a verbal agreement.
Right.
It's like, you don't have to put pen to paper. If you say you're doing it and then you back out.
Be prepared, especially if it's witnessed. It's not like we were in the men's room and like, hey, you want to do this? Okay. And then, hey, what's happened?
Why don't we get back to the,
well,
the whole
I just
purpose.
Wanted to say that I yes. love Julian Sands. He was so English and handsome. And then I watched this and I was like, ooh.
Julian Sands is not in Chud, by the way.
But he could have been.
Oh, sweet Jesus. We've got off the rails here.
I love Amos too. He's too good for Chud, but not good enough for Boxing Helena.
It's a sad situation.
So okay. Did I hear correctly that we won't be reviewing it? Because someone on Facebook did message me that said, what are you going to do, Boxing Helena?
First of all, Boxing Helena is not a horror movie. It's kind of a weird romance.
It sounds kind of horrible.
there you go. Very sad situation. Okay, let's get back on track. Chud. I love this movie because it starts off with like a housewife walking her dog in the shittiest part of New York in the
dress, like Edith Kravitz.
Edith Kravitz in the middle of the night, in the middle of the street. So, there's lots of farce.
Those like Kitten Hill slippers with like the little feather boa puff on the toe.
That is correct. That is exactly, that was the fashion, if you will. It makes no sense. Okay, so she, again, walking dog in the middle of the street. Okay, if a car comes around the corner, she's dead meat.
In New York, we must presume, right?
This is Charles Bronson era, Death Wish, New York, where it's Jeff Goldblum is lurking behind every alleyway to physically assault you.
We don't know if Jeff Goldblum was not the Chud. We don't know. He might have been the Chud.
I can't say he wasn't.
So it must be true.
It must be true by the transitive property. She's walking by the manhole, and at that precise moment, green slimy claws like lunge out from the manhole cover, drag her in, and drags her dog in as well. She's taking the dog with her. If I'm going, you're going too, Pooch. Very sad.
Boom.
Now, this kind of sets the tone, but what's funny, I don't know if you made this connection. Later we meet Captain Bosch, who's the kind of sympathetic police officer on the case.
Right.
That's his wife, who disappears in the first scene.
You were telling me it was like the actor's wife.
No. Behind the scenes, the actress is actually Daniel Stern's wife in real life, strangely enough.
Lord.
But okay, so she disappears. Captain Bosch, there's been a lot of, people are talking to him. Hey, there's been a lot of missing persons. At this point, he knows his wife has disappeared, but doesn't seem all that concerned about it. Isn't until like the end of the movie where he angrily is yelling at somebody, they killed my wife as well. You didn't care about the last 2 hours of the movie.
She's been missing for weeks. And that little dog, too.
It makes no GD sense. I mean, because basically what's happening is the whole thrust of this is that some government agency is like dropping off their toxic waste in the sewers underneath New York City and have been doing it for a long time. For like however long, just like for ages, longer than the course of this movie.
Right.
And eventually, because there's a segment of the homeless population who live underneath live in the tunnels underneath New York City. Some of them started swimming in the toxic waste. I don't know what they were doing. They were rolling around in it. They were throwing it at each other. I don't, it was like a food fight, but with toxic waste.
This is one of those old-timey message movies. There's two problems in society.
Yes.
Toxic waste and homeless. God forbid that they merge like they have in this. So we either have to divert the toxic waste or kill all the homeless. Kevin?
Kill two birds with one stone is
what
you're
saying. What do you choose?
Well, that's the question. So, okay. So people are disappearing, not just homeless people, but just people walking their dogs at midnight on dangerous streets are disappearing. So there's literally a scene where a beat cop's like, hey, you know, we got another missing persons report. You know, what are we going to do? And the cops, Bosch, is like, oh, don't worry. You know, file it as missing persons, whatever. You know, we've got other crimes we have to solve. Again, at this point, his wife has disappeared. Doesn't seem all that concerned. He's getting pressure from the chief and from the commissioner to basically bury all of these disappearances. And most of the movie, he's cool with it.
He's not going to get that inheritance unless, you know, there has to be a claim of the dead body. Maybe that's what's getting him moving. He doesn't care that his wife is walking the dog at midnight down the middle of the street in New York City.
Does not care. Not even a little bit. Now, about this time, we meet John Hurd's character, who is a
douchey photographer.
He's a douchey. That's exactly right. I guess he used to be a fashion photographer, but now he kind of does what?
Hobos.
He's the Annie Leibovitz of the homeless set.
I will tell you from because I'm kind of a photographer.
Yes.
In 2022, they're still freaking taking pictures of hobos. Why does it always have to be either a naked lady on a bed diddling, or it has to be hobo pictures? Isn't there something else we could all take pictures of? I can't look at any more hobo pictures.
Can't we combine them in a really weird fetish?
Oh, I'm sure somebody's got that covered.
Sweet Jesus.
That's some dark web action.
That is, you've damn skippy. So yes, he used to be a fashion photographer, but now he takes pictures of the homeless, but is kind of irritated about it because like there's some article that's being written and he's just like, he's dodging the guy's calls. Like, Derek, I can't get you those pictures, bro. So it's like, how do you pay the bills if you don't want to do anything? It's like, I'm going to take pictures, but I'm not going to actually use them, you know, and sell them for anything, I guess. I don't know.
His cameras alone are several thousand. He's shooting a Leica and he's shooting a Hasselblad. So the Hasselblad now, I think that would be like $5,000. I think he could sell those and move on. And how are you shooting the homeless with a camera that's worth thousands of dollars?
That's how you do it, I guess.
In San Francisco, they give you a little knock-knock and then away goes the camera.
A little knock-knock? Is that what they say? Who's there? We meet his live-in girlfriend, who's also a model. And the first time we meet her, she's putting makeup on her ass because she has a pimple. Or a bimple, as we call it around our household. When you have a pimple on your butt, it's a bimple.
Well, so you know what? Too bad nobody thought about that when they were shooting Flesh for Frankenstein.
Sweet Jesus.
There were all kinds of ingrown hairs and razor burns and God knows what else.
Do not zoom in. That's all I'm saying. Sweet Jesus. So there's three main characters in this movie. You got Bosch, the sympathetic police captain. You've got John Hurd, who's the douchey photographer. Then there's the Reverend AJ, played by Daniel Stern, who works at a soup kitchen.
Oh my God. Have you seen Daniel Stern lately?
No. Is this how he looks now?
He looks even more insane. He looks now. He should really play the Reverend in the soup kitchen or just homeless.
Oh God. I just kept looking at him because whenever they show him, He is just greasy and grimy. He basically took the wife beater from Dennis Franz from Blowout.
Oh, no. With the cream of chicken soup down the front.
With the cream of chicken. Again, he's working. He's preparing food for the homeless. You think the homeless would be like, you know what? I've lost my appetite.
He's only 5 minutes away of being homeless himself.
Sweet Jesus. He's a sympathetic guy.
He's not
guy.
Even a full step ahead.
So... Daniel Stern calls in Bosch and is just like, hey, I've lost a bunch of my regular people that come here, the homeless people who come here. I've lost 12 of them over the last 2 weeks. But it's primarily the people who live underground. You know, no one seems to care. The homeless people are going missing. No one cares, blah, blah, blah. Bosch is now, because again, Bosch knows more than he's telling us. He doesn't know about cannibals in the sewers, but he knows he has to cover up the disappearances. And for the most part, he's okay with it. But somehow meeting, you know, the soup kitchen worker kind of reignites his conscience a little bit.
I guess.
Who in the hell knows? Very upsetting. They go down into the sewer. Now, half the movie is people just going down into the tunnels beneath the city. John Hurt goes down there to meet the people he photographed, and one of the dudes has got a huge wound in his leg.
Like, why are you pulling that bandage off?
That doesn't...
Are you a doctor?
No.
I mean, you can help drag him out, but why you want to wrap a thing that literally goes from your knee to your hip? I'm like, oh... There's got to be something bad under there. Nothing I can do with that.
He peels back the bandage, takes a couple pictures, and then it's just like, deuces, I'm out. So he hasn't helped the dude to the hospital, give him some ascorbactine or anything. He's just like, okay, good to see you. I'm out. And I kept realizing for like 3/4 of this movie, John Hurd is totally oblivious to the fact that there are disappearances, much less that there are Chud on the loose.
Now, his whole character is like a kind of a douchey dick. So he is just absorbed with his own situation. But one thing I wanted to mention, why is it that when people need to go to the sewer, it always has to be at midnight? We can't wait till after breakfast or something.
You can't do it. You have to wait. You have to wait till Jeff Goldblum chases you down to a tunnel.
Exactly. I mean, it's going to be dark anyway, I guess. But
yes.
It just seems, you know, the freaks do come out at night.
The freaks come out at night. That's right. You're absolutely right. There's a lot in all the movies we watch. There's many occasions where somebody's like, there's something scary going on. Let's wait to investigate it when it's pitch black outside. That's the only time.
I need one more cup of coffee, and then I'll get an egg, a muffin, and then we'll go. That never happens.
No, it's never, I get up bright and early and we'll solve this.
We'll open the grave. We'll go to brunch, and then we'll open the grave.
That's exactly right.
It's 2 a.m. Let's go hit that grave now.
Yes. There's Castle Dracula in the distance. Let's wait till the moon comes up. Then we'll investigate.
And there's a thunderstorm.
Exactly. No can do. My question to you is, do we need the fashion photographer character at all in this movie? Does he serve any purpose?
No.
None.
No.
None.
All you need is the soup kitchen guy and a cop.
That's all you need.
You don't need the lady with a boil on her ass. You don't need John Hurd and his fancy cameras. No.
I never realized that before watching this. I'm just like, this character serves no purpose. No purpose. We don't need him. We don't need the girl with the carbuncle on her cheek. No, thank you.
I mean, honestly, it should be that the photographer and the soup kitchen guy both notice that the homeless are missing and come together to get the police. But that's not what happens.
No. John Hurd goes down into the bowels of the earth with like a freelance reporter character that seems to also have no purpose It's like he's kind of a wordless character as well. They both go down in there and they're like, what's going on? We're going to go meet those homeless people. Huh? I thought I heard a noise. You hear something? No, I'm good. And then freelance reporter dude is killed, dragged off by the monster. And John Hurt just like, this is all news to me. I don't know. This is, I imagine being that guy. You're like, I'm just down here to shoot some homeless people with my fancy camera. And now there's a green monster with no preamble. This is all a mystery. So
I'm like, I'm getting out of here.
I'm out. There are multiple scenes where John Hurt's just like, giving like the what the hell is going on here look. At one point he flips out and has to be restrained by Daniel Stern. And they literally roll around on some corpses. They walk into a room where it's clear the Chud have just like exploded some people. So there's just like limbs everywhere. John Hurt goes, and rolls on the floor. Oh, God. Tune into that scene, if nothing else.
Now, brother.
Yes.
Is there only one Chud or is there multiple Chud?
Yeah, there are basically, okay. So if you live in the bowels of the earth, evidently 90% of the people who live in the bowels of the earth become the Chud because they walk into like a chamber that's full of like oozy, gooey, radioactive sludge and they bathe in it. They even swim in it. I don't know
maybe it tastes like the stuff that was inside of Stretch Armstrong. Do you remember Stretch Armstrong?
I do.
Well, once I cut a little hole in it and this green gel came out and I tasted it and it was sweet. So maybe that's what turned you.
This is not a good story to tell. It could have been the stuff. I mean, we were making fun of the people, like the crazy old hobo licking the stuff out of the snow. You are that crazy old hobo. Good Lord.
It's radioactive, man.
It could be radio. And we don't even, I mean, they have a Geiger counter and it's constantly going off. At one point they walk into the room and go, damn, this stuff's all radioactive. And they don't go like, we better get out of here because I don't want to die a slow Chernobyl death. They like, so like, hang on. Let's get a little closer. What does this say? Can you read that? It's like, get the hell out of there.
It says shut the front door.
They should have become Chuds as well, is what I'm saying.
So do the Chud only eat un-Chuds? If they're cannibalistic, why can't they get Chudly with the Chuds?
This is a thing. It's like zombie movies.
This is a thing.
It's like zombie movies where it's just like they don't eat each other. Because then it would be a less interesting movie. It's like, oh, the zombies are attacking each other. I'll just chill in here and let them kill each other.
Then how are they cannibals?
Because they are genetically human, I guess, right?
Well, zombies are dead. So is the Chud dead or alive?
They are alive. They are radioactive mutants. Does that answer all your questions? I think it does.
So do they taste different?
You mean if you were to eat a Chud?
Yes, as a matter of fact. Why don't the Chuds eat other Chuds? Do they taste different than, like, say, like a John Hurt flavored person?
Well, I mean, these are important questions. Because number one, when you say, do they taste different? I wasn't sure if you meant their ability to taste. Is it different? Yeah.
Can they pick up the essence of truffle and tobacco in this fine wine?
That is the question. Well, yes. Well, the moment the clean-ish like surface people come down, the Chud got to have some of that. And let me tell you, it's very strange. I've never lived in New York. But according to this movie, every building in New York has a cellar, and in that cellar is some kind of a doorway, a hatch that leads down into the bowels of New York City.
There's always a Chud escape way in New York City.
If you went to
like the Guggenheim, there'd still be like a door to Chudville there.
Clearly, right? The United Nations building, there's got to be a hatch that leads down into the Daily Planet building. It's got to be a hatch that leads down to
30 Rock, there's a Chud Hatch. The Empire State Building, there's a Chud Hatch. Statue of Liberty, Chud or no Chud? Does it go under the water?
That's a question. That's for the sequel. But at one point, okay, so a douchey photographer's douchey girlfriend is taking a shower, and the drain gets clogged?
Gets chudded up.
So she takes like a coat hanger and tries to like snake it, I guess, and blood just explodes out of the drain. Why? No explanation.
We don't know.
No explanation.
She tried to stuff a chud down the garbage disposal and it backed it up the system.
I mean, that's the question. Was there a little baby chud climbing out of the drain and she lanced it like a boil or what happened?
We call him Chudley.
That's exactly right. Good old Chudley. But that leads to she's alone in the apartment and there's a chud. One of the chuds has come up through her little hatch in her building. And presumably there's other people who live in this building, but they're not interested in any of those other people.
This chud likes to go to the top floor.
Top floor! All the way! He manages to smash his way in. She throws like film developer in his face, which Chud didn't like that. Then later, because as a douchey fashion photographer, you must have a collection of samurai swords on the wall.
Oh, extra douchey.
It's
he's
a
doubling
thing.
Down. He's doubling down. Does he have like the headband that he wears with the kimono to impress the ladies?
It worked, evidently. I mean, the beautiful fashion lady is doing her thing. And then for some reason, spontaneously, the chud's neck like stretches out for some reason. Like from Evil Dead 2, where the person becomes an ostrich. It's like a long, old, crazy. Why? Just spontaneously. But luckily, it helped her because she's able to chop his head off with her with her broadsword that she just happened to have readily available. Sweet Jesus.
Maybe we're too harsh on the John Hurt character. Maybe it was her samurai sword.
You know what? You may be right. Because she earlier in the
movie. Don't be sexist. Don't be a hater, Kevin.
That's right. I do not judge. Do not judge. Earlier in the movie, he was taking pictures of her. And this caused big, like, you know, strife in their relationship because it was a perfume ad. But she was bare-ass naked with just like some kind of a towel they threw over her at some point.
Which is fascinating to me because at first I was confused. I thought he was jealous because she was going to a different photo shoot and somebody else was taking the pictures. But he's pissed that he's taking the pictures of his girlfriend.
He's just kind of a dick.
And it's like a surprise because he didn't know people were paying him money to do his job.
No, the issue was he wasn't really paying attention. Like she was like, "Honey, you're gonna take pictures of me for that photo shoot for me tomorrow. It's a national photo shoot. You know, it's big for my career." He's like, "Honey, I wasn't listening. When you mentioned this to me earlier, I was watching the game. I was not paying attention to anything you said." So
wait. So this was all scheduled 24 hours in advance, this national photo shoot? She asked him while he was taking a dump or in the shower the same day?
That's the question. That is the question. So he is taking pictures of her, all the while making snide comments, eventually shouting, "You know this is crap. I know this is crap. They know this is crap because they're the ones who wrote it." So it's like, is he trying to get her fired?
Yeah. "Thanks for ruining my career, you bitter son of a bitch. Go back down and live with the chud." Yeah, he had really no redeeming qualities.
He was not a good dude. Well, and then he bailed on her. He gets the phone call. He just bounces. He's like, "I'm later, hon. I know I'm the father of your child." So there's that whole subplot as well.
And I know I just left my camera and all my equipment there too, so.
I don't need it.
I don't need it. I left it for the chud.
I left it for the chud, for God's sakes.
I'd be giving his shit away. That's what I'd been. I would have been bitter and vindictive.
Just toss it right out the window? Mm-hmm. Is that how we do? Oh, God help me. So later, Daniel Stern. Oh, I didn't even tell you this. This is another amazing scene. When Bosch goes to the soup kitchen to meet with the Reverend, the Reverend's like, you know, I've lost all my underground homeless people, but there's one guy, the one guy from the underground community that you should meet. It's Val. And he introduces him to this dude who's clearly like schizophrenic or crazy. I mean, something's going on with Val. Val's not doing great.
No.
And it's like he interviews him like, this is important information. While he's like shaking and foaming and scratching. It's just like.
That sounds more like some meth or some crack.
That's what I'm saying. It's like clearly this is not important information you're getting from dear old Val. It's a sad situation.
How about interviewing any of the people that are around any of the missing people?
Well, and that's the thing. What's his name? John Hurd's character, like, is evidently like good friends with this small group of crazy homeless people. I guess they're not crazy.
Oh no, they're pretty crazy.
Well, okay, you have the Chuds.
You gotta give them that.
The Chud ones are definitely crazy, but it's like the small group. It's like. The lady who gets arrested because she tries to steal Sam McMurray's rifle or sidearm, his pistol, because you have to. Now, if you live underground with the Chuds, you got to have weapons of some sort.
Of course. This is rape culture, dude. You got to have a gun to keep the rapey Chud away.
The Chud, as far as I know, the Chud are not raping anybody. Although
I'm just trying to figure out a way to work rape culture into the commentary.
Did you saw the Academy Awards, didn't you?
No, I only saw the important part that you texted to the entire family.
Yes, we're not going to go into great detail of the Will Smith slap, but there was one funny scene where Wanda Sykes was doing a tour of the Motion Picture Academy of Arts and Sciences, or whatever it's called, like the museum.
Right.
And at one point, she passes by a display that has like a picture or a mask of like an orc from Lord of the Rings or whatever. And right. She's like, oh, it's Harvey Weinstein.
Wop, wop.
I thought it was good.
Yeah.
Anywho.
I do like Wanda Sykes.
She's dynamite. Later in the movie, Daniel Stern is down underneath in the sewers again, but now the evil government people are like, our plan is we're gonna secure all the manhole covers, lock all the entrances.
It's New York City,
right? And we've already established that every building has a hatch that leads directly to the underground kingdom. So I don't know how this is gonna work.
Oh my god!
They're gonna secure all the hatches and then pump gas down into the underground city to basically asphyxiate all the Chud. And
this
I guess
literally the same plan to another movie we just watched.
I wrote this down multiple times. There's been three movies that we have watched where the heroes of the movie are trapped underneath the city, like they're pounding on the manhole cover, let me out, yeah. Let me out, with the creatures that are coming to get them. Okay, one is Chud.
Yeah.
What are the other two? Do you remember what the other two were?
Was one the Canadian Michael Myers?
What the hell's the Canadian Michael Myers? Oh, are you talking about My Bloody Valentine?
Oh, yeah, not Michael Myers, Jason. Yeah, Canadian Jason?
No. Nope.
Is it the Blob?
One is the Blob. Yes, very good. Yes, Kevin Dillon and Shawnee Smith were locked underneath where they did the same thing. They parked a truck over the manhole while the Blob's coming to get them.
So basically between the gas or the Blob, but wait, what's the third movie?
Third movie is the immortal classic Alligator. Oh. Robert Forster is trapped under the manhole. Let me out as the... As the 45-foot-long alligator, is it climbing up the ladder? I'm not sure how this works in an alligator movie. But anyway, this is a reoccurring theme, evidently.
Absolutely. But the one thing where a gator does not have in common with the Blob in this movie is, once again, they're trying to contain air or something with, like, a screen.
That's like how correct.
You cannot seal off the sewers of New York. I mean, literally, there's like drains in the sidewalk where shit drains in. Gas is going to escape. So basically, your plan is you want to just nuke New York. Is that the plan, to have the nuclear waste spray everywhere?
That is the plan.
Two, in the blob, it could squirt through a cheese grater.
Yes.
I don't know if you know, manhole covers have a hole so you could open them up.
That is correct. So the plan is to flood the underground with explosive, flammable gas.
Even though it's completely flooded with nuclear waste already.
That is correct. Not a good plan. But so Daniel Stern is locked underneath, and John Hurd, entirely separately for entirely separate reasons, is also locked underneath. And at one point, John Hurd goes and meets the family of homeless people that he's worked with before. And one of them's just had his like guts all ripped out. Like he's just, he's not doing so hot.
Viewers, if you could only see Kevin's face as he describes it. it's a classic haul. I'm going to start taking pictures of you and posting it.
Wouldn't be the first time. And Victor, the paternal character, is now like half chud. He's kind of chudded out.
How do you get chuddy? Do you get chuddy from a chud bite, or is it just from eating the green jello?
I think it's a little column A, a little column B, frankly. And he attacks John Hurd. John Hurd shoots him, kills him. But that pisses off the lady who he'd been friendly with, because she's like, "You killed my brother." So she's about to kill him. Daniel Stern appears, knocks her down, and saves John Hurd's life. These two characters have never met before in this movie. This is an hour and a half into the movie. The two main characters are just now meeting. He's like, "Are you Cooper?" "Yeah, have we met?" He's like, "Oh, I work at the soup kitchen." He's like, "The soup kitchen? Thank God you guys deliver."
What the hell?
It was great. It was great. Good times. So
you can tell, I mean, for whatever else is going on, this is one of these pictures where you hire all your friends.
Well,
what it smells like to me.
Well, Joe Bob talked about how basically these were all kind of New York theater actors. You know, this is before Daniel Stern was a big star and John Hurd was a big star. And what's interesting is that later they acted again in such hits as, do you know what movie they were both in a few years later? A big hit?
No.
Home Alone.
Oh, you know, I don't think I've ever seen that all the way through.
Okay, then your soul is black and dead.
It's not
Daniel Stern.
Comedy's a little broad for me.
Your soul is black and dead. It's a Hollywood, Hollywood. It's a holiday classic, and it's a Hollywood classic as far as I know. Daniel Stern was one of the Wet Bandits with Joe Pesci. That little Kevin McAllister, played by Macaulay Culkin, was kind of fending off, like protecting his house.
That's not the one where he meets Donald Trump.
That's part two, which they are both in as well. Now, John Hurd plays Kevin McAllister's father.
Oh, you're so, right.
Yes.
He was the hardest working man in show business for until he died, I think. He was working right up until the last minute.
Until the last minute. Absolutely.
Cut. Crumble.
We didn't even talk about it. There's a scene in the movie where it's the diner scene where John Goodman rolls in with Jay Thomas playing police officers in literally a 2-minute role where they're in there ordering cheeseburgers, flirting with the waitress. And it's like, what's going on behind me? And then it's like attacked by the chud. And it looks like literally the diner just exploded with blood. Like every window is smashed, blood just exploding. It's like, it was literally like a blood bomb went off in the middle of this place.
John Goodman looks so young. He looked even younger than Big Easy. So I'm not even sure. What year did this movie come out?
This was 84. This was like one of his first roles ever.
Oh yeah. So this is a couple years before Big Easy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This was, I mean, literally, it is a 2-minute roll. It is a two, and Jay Thomas, this is before, I mean, he might have been a DJ at the time, but this is well before when he was on Cheers. He was a DJ for Power 106, and he parlayed that into kind of minor acting roles. He was Carla's boyfriend on Cheers, if you remember. He played a hockey player, like Eddie Levesque.
Oh, yes, yeah, yes.
That was Jay Thomas.
For some reason, when you were saying Jay Thomas, I was thinking of a different comedian.
Okay.
Never mind. I totally remember. I used to think he was cute.
He's a handsome devil. Let's see. Oh, I didn't even talk about this. When the Chud is attacking, like trying to break in to a naked model's house, she trips over the phone and snaps the cord. So like she picks it up, like holds both ends of the cord going, oh my God, because that's what would happen. It would literally, it wouldn't just pull it out of the wall. The cord just snaps in two. So the phone is now totally worthless.
And then what was your plan? You're going to sit there while the Chud eats you, calling 911 and waiting for someone to run up to the top stairs to save you from the Chud. You're on your own, sister.
Well, and cops arrive anyway. Before they're just like, we'll just pull up here. We're good. Walk in there. Killed by the Chud in 2 seconds.
Boom.
Boom. She's out. Then she opens the window and is screaming, help, help, help. No one comes. And ignoring the fact that they're like, there's a fire escape right there. How about climb out the damn window, go down the fire escape? No.
Save yourself. If you can't figure that out, then you deserve to be eaten by the Chud.
You deserve to be eaten by the Chud.
You get what you get, and you don't throw a fit.
That's what I'm telling these people. Later in the movie, Bosch is now confronting the head of, I don't know, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, whatever he is, some kind of government bureaucrat who is the one behind dumping all the toxic waste. Because this is also the time of the big reveal that Chud, cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers, that's what he told them it stood for, really doesn't stand for that at all. It really stands for contamination hazard urban disposal. Because
Wasn't the story was they weren't allowed to drive the nuclear waste through New York City, so they decided to just slide it through the sewers?
Well, this was the thing. They talk about this briefly in a very convoluted way. Basically, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission was driving the toxic waste through town, but people sued the city, sued the government, whatever. So basically, at that point, the nuclear waste was not able to leave because it was already in the city, but now it can't leave. But it's really a smokescreen, okay? That toxic waste, while not good, is not the issue. That's just kind of the thing that basically reveals, by the way, we've been doing this for years. You know what I mean? That's why it's like, oh, here's the toxic waste. And they're like, wait a minute, what's this other stuff behind it? And that was the reveal, like, this has been happening for a while. So it was like this.
Been flushing it down the toilet.
With the alligators. So, yes.
And the piranha.
So Bosch is now confronting the head of this government agency. Like, I'm going to reveal everything. I'm going to tell everybody. But first we have to release Daniel Stern and John Hurd from underneath the sewers. Like, I guess everybody else is already asphyxiated, but we have to at least rescue our two protagonists of the movie.
Do we have to, really?
That is the question. So Bosch punches him out, takes the keys, moves the car, and tries to open up the manhole, but he gets shot by that dude, by Wilson, was his name. Ah, I'm dying. Somehow, John Hurd and Daniel Stern push the manhole cover and escape. But then Wilson tries to run them over. Like, there were 400, like, reporters. Now there's nobody to be found anywhere in the street.
Yeah. The streets are abandoned, and now there's a deranged lunatic with a bread truck. Again, another bread truck.
It's those damn bread trucks! It's a menace to society! Daniel Stern takes the gun from Bosch's waistband and is now suddenly Clint Eastwood. He's Mel Gibson doing a barrel roll. And he's just like, you know, taking a knee, shooting, shoots Wilson through the windshield, kills him. Wilson kind of slumps over, and he falls out of the car. But I was like, is he going to fall right into the manhole, right into the Chud's mouth? That would have been cool. It should have been that.
Better. It should have been that.
It should have been that. Unfortunately, what happens instead is the bread truck hits the manhole and then just explodes.
Like a nuclear freaking bomb.
Exactly. It was not a bread truck so much as a nitroglycerin truck. I don't know what they're doing there.
Literally, children, is all that happened was the tire of the truck kind of landed in the manhole.
And it
caused like a nuclear explosion.
A mushroom cloud leveled the city. But I would say, like, wouldn't it level the city considering that it's all filled with gas now? That they just lit the match?
Don't you need like a spark or something? Couldn't Jeff Goldblum go by and flick a cigarette or something?
Poor Jeff Goldblum. We're dragging his name into this.
I will forever have the image of Death Witch with him the raping the wife and the daughter and spray painting their naked bodies. That forever will be burned into my 14-year-old mind.
It's very upsetting. If you have not seen Death Wish lately, it will knock your socks off. In the first 10 minutes of the movie, you see mad rapist Jeff Goldblum. And then never see him again.
And now he's beloved Jeff Goldblum. So I have this now love-hate relationship. How do you turn your career from unnamed, terrifying rapist to fashion icon much loved? How do you do that with your career? And can someone please do it to mine?
Yes, he goes from mad rapist number 3 to the world according to Jeff Goldblum. I'm waiting for him to say world according to Jeff Goldblum covering crazy rapists of the 70s. Next episode on Disney Plus.
I'm waiting for being Jeff Goldblum.
I would
that
love
could
it.
Be the trifecta after being John Malkovich, being Christopher Walken, then it could be being Jeff Goldblum.
I would love it.
With the exact same cast.
Is that too much to ask for, America? That's what I need.
Why aren't people listening to us? Why are they just remaking the same movies over and over again when we were dropping pearls?
That's what I'm saying, man. Any other observations you'd like to share? Shall we move on?
I have this one thing written down, and please. I can visualize it, but you tell me why it exists.
Okay.
Izod Quarter Swallower.
I know exactly what this is. So Daniel Stern is in a meeting with like the police commissioner, the chief of police, Captain Bosch, and Wilson, the head of this government agency. And Daniel Stern like has evidence of all, like he pulls out like equipment that they had underground of like, you know, here's a boot for some reason. Here is a crazy Geiger counter. And he says like, you know what? I'm gonna call the papers. Since you guys aren't gonna do anything about this, I'm gonna spill all the beans. And he runs downstairs, and Wilson calls somebody. Goes, yes, he's a dirty hippie. Go follow him. Take care of him. So Daniel Stern, he is a goddamn dirty hippie. He is as filthy as can be. He runs down the street and comes to a phone booth, and tries to put the quarter in, and this dude wearing aviator sunglasses and like a maroon Izod t-shirt comes up wearing like Dockers or something. Some kind of khaki pants.
Oh yeah. It was
takes
Biff,
the quarter.
For sure.
The total Biff takes the quarter from him and swallows it and gives him like a look like kind of a strange, an indeterminate look. Is that a come hither look? I don't know what, are you trying to impress me, big boy? I don't know what the situation was.
I was waiting for the hard swallow.
No, I'm not going to touch that. Moving on. But what's funny is that actor, the actor who did that, the quarter swallower has been in other things. He was like in Trading Places. Most
as
recently.
Quarter swallower.
That's all he does. If you watch Ozark, which is a very popular show on Netflix these days, he plays Frank Sr. of the Kansas City Mob. So there you go. Knocking your socks off already.
I've never seen that show.
It's a good show. Izod, Quarter Swallower. Shall we go behind the scenes?
What's the difference between Izod and Lacoste?
This is an important question. At one point, there are two separate companies that used to be together. So there was a period where it was literally just called Izod Lacoste.
Yes.
They kind of went their separate ways. And I think most of us think Izod is the alligator, but it's right. Actually Lacoste is the alligator.
Because now, when you go, I think the stores just say Lacoste, but it has the alligator. Right.
That's what I'm saying.
Because for Polaroid, they did a whole series. You know, Polaroid has the rainbow icons. They did a thing with Lacoste where there's multiple alligators going down in all the colors.
That sounds hideous. awful. You got to remember, guys, early to mid 80s, there was a lot of, I'm wearing this polo shirt and it's got like a weird insignia or design over the breast. Basically, you had your alligators, you had literally the polo players right. doing their thing. I remember there was La Tigra, which had a little crazy like tiger character
was
on there.
The Walmart version.
But I have to tell you, the cool kids did not choose to wear these things. Okay. In my school, if you were wearing an alligator on your shirt, you were going to get your ass beat.
No.
So you don't do it like that. Don't do it,
so
ladies
wrong.
And gentlemen.
Let me tell you, because I'm a little bit older.
Yes.
It had to be Lacoste, and you had to pop that collar. You never folded the collar. You never wanted a crease. You starched that motherfucker up with your Ray-Bans. Now, later on, because it was a little bit more expensive, then Ralph Lauren took over, and then you had the little polo player. Now, if you're like my family and you're on a budget, then it was the tiger or the penguin. And I'm pretty there was a penguin, and I'm pretty sure we made it up calling it La Tigre.
That is not true. There were commercials for La Tigre. And by the way,
is that from The Gap, or is that from
Pick
and Save, or where did that come from?
That was Payless.
Old Roy?
Old Roy! Exactly right. Okay, there is a bit of an age difference between us. So all I can tell you is in the third grade, if I'm wearing my Izod, I'm getting a boot in the ass. Maybe things were different at your school at that point.
Oh my God, I thought you were at Kauia. Was this St. Teresa's?
We're talking St. T's.
St. Yeah. Teresa's, where the stormtroopers are coming and kicking your ass with a steel-toed boot? What's happening? Those damn nuns.
It wasn't the nuns. They did other things though, but this is neither here nor there. Shall we go behind the scenes? And I'm not talking behind the scenes for Lacoste Industries or whatever the hell it is.
Or behind the scenes at St. Teresa's.
No, do not ask no questions. We talked about how the first woman who dies, the poor old dog walker, is Daniel Stern's wife in real life. And I think he's still his wife, actually.
God bless him.
This was one of John Goodman's first movie appearances, like we said. Again, he's on screen for, I swear to God, 2 minutes, barely.
I always loved John Goodman.
In 2011, as an April Fool's prank, the Criterion Collection, USA's most prestigious distributor of home video, announced that it was releasing a special edition DVD and Blu-ray disc of the film with a numbered spine, basically.
Oh my God. That's yes. So fantastic.
Did not happen. In fact, I own this movie on digital, but it's only available in standard definition even today.
They didn't even bother.
This was part of the inspiration for the Jordan Peele movie Us. We talk about where there's people who live underneath the city in the catacombs, basically.
That is so loose. It's literally like this is based on a true story. Like Amityville is based on a true story.
Right. No, I mean, it's not a direct like recreation. But
is it
like at the beginning,
like Suspiria?
That is correct. There is a like a the box for Chud the VHS tape is readily visible in Us if you're paying attention.
Oh, so,
good times.
Maybe I saw that.
This one we didn't even talk about. This is the film debut of Kim Greist, who has been in three movies that I'm familiar with. We actually reviewed one of them on this show. Do you remember what else she was in? This is the naked model with the pimple. Yes.
She did look familiar. She was kind of rocking that let's get physical Olivia Newton-John vibe.
That's correct.
But no. Saturday Night Fever?
She was in Brazil. She was the love interest in Brazil.
You're right. That's right.
And the only other, I'm sure she's been in a thousand things. The only other thing I remember her in is that she was also the love interest in Throw Mama from the Train with Billy Crystal and Danny DeVito. Oh,
Lord, I saw that once and that was enough.
Oh, that's very upsetting.
Uh-huh.
I think that's about it in terms of...
Hey, I like Harry Met Sally, but Billy Crystal's not my let's always go to Billy Crystal guy.
I will say this. When Billy is good, he is really good. I always enjoyed Billy Crystal hosting the Oscars.
He
was a delight, but you were absolutely right. There were a number of stinkers in the Billy Crystal oeuvre, if you will. I think that's about it. Shall we talk about ratings?
All right.
The movie Chud currently has 29% rotten on Rotten Tomatoes. But don't feel bad. The audience gave it 32%. Wah, wah, wah. Very upsetting. Let me see what the top critics have to say, if anything at all.
I'm not even going to mention Rex Reed. I'm not even going to say it.
Don't even bother, because no top critics reviewed Chud, which is very upsetting. No, nothing. I mean, there's something called the Q Network Film Desk, so I'm not going to discuss that. Very upsetting.
First of all, that's giving me all kinds of images, so let's skip anything that starts with Q.
Yeah. No, I'm
unless
not...
it's Quetzalcoatl.
It is the Quetzalcoatl.
Maybe that is Q.
It is Q, the winged serpent. That is correct. What is your rating for Chudley?
I am going to give it 3 out of 5 Chud burgers.
I don't even know what that means.
Someone has to figure out what they taste like.
I'm going to give it 3.5 out of 5 butt carbuncles. I think it's, look, I like this movie. I think it is a lot of fun. Is it a perfect film? By no means. Is it a perfect film?
I think it's fun. I gave it a totally 80s 3, which is where 90% of Kevin's childhood dreams go to die.
How dare you? How dare you? Well, it sounds like it's horrible and gruesome, but it really isn't. It isn't really that violent. There's a lot of like people getting pulled off.
Yeah.
It's campy. You know, the green, you know, Chud hands pull somebody off camera and then they're dead. You never see him again. There's one scene where this woman's walking down the street and she sees some movement in like a pile of trash.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, I think I'm going to investigate this.
I would not.
Who the hell would do that? No one on earth would be like.
I just stick your hand in there and stir it up a little bit. See what's in there. You deserve what you get if curiosity killed the cat, man.
You're telling me. I ain't doing that.
No.
You get what you get and you don't get upset is basically the sad situation. So yeah. I think it's fun. It's fairly inoffensive for a movie about mutant cannibals.
I will tell you though, I remember seeing the ads on TV. They weren't playing it for camp. The ads were like, this is a seriously disturbing movie. Like they were playing like this is gonna jack you up. You're going to get PTSD after this.
Well, and it's clear, like, oftentimes movies of this caliber are peopled with lousy actors.
Yes.
And this movie clearly has, like, good actors. You know what I mean?
I agree.
And that gives it some kind of credibility.
I think this is just a bunch of ding-dongs who like each other. Like, yeah, you can be in it too. We need a fashion photographer. No, we don't. But, you know, come and hang out.
It's basically, he said, like, hey, John Hurt, want to be in this movie? You could be one of the homeless.
Why not?
How about I play a douchey fashion photographer instead?
But is there any other kind?
There really isn't a part for a fashion photographer in this movie. You know what? Write it anyway. It serves no purpose. Makes no sense. I'm in. I'm on board.
John Hurt, I'll be in your movie, but only if I can be a fashion photographer that takes pictures of hobos.
Well, and we didn't even talk about the subtle subplot where it's the photographer and the model are like grappling with, I'm pregnant. What should we do?
Should we have the baby?
should we give it to the chud, or what do we do? What is a reasonable person do in this scenario?
And he looked at her lovingly and said, "Baby, I don't give a shit."
If I say I want one, will that make you happy? Okay.
Now shut up. Stop crying. Move along.
All my bags are packed. I'm ready to go. Anyway. So thank you very much. Go to our page on Twitter at TPodcastTWDie. Go to our page on Facebook. Go somewhere at The Podcast That Wouldn't Die. Aaron, are we on Instagram? It's hopeless.
We are on the Insta and the Gram. We are The Podcast That Wouldn't Die. And by the way, she's not leaving on a jet plane. She's leaving on the city bus. Are we on the Twitter? I've lost all track of everything I was going to say. Please, line.
You can email us at thepodcastthatwouldn't die@gmail.com. We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere the finer podcasts are available. So don't forget to like, share, review, and rate, if you will.
Phone a friend.
Aaron, are you on social media? What's your personal social media?
Dude, I'm socialed up. I think I have like 5 Gmail accounts. But I'm on the Insta. I am The Cult of Aaron. I am Don't Feed the Pigeon. I'm on the Twitsky. I'm on Artsy. I'm on First Dibs. You know, I'm here. I'm there. I'm everywhere. So beware.
Sounds good. So there you have it. Now, next week, we'll be discussing the Alfred Hitchcock classic, The Birds, which I have not seen all the way through. So this will be a new experience for us all. So thank you very much.
I have lots of tales about trying to find the school and all this other nonsense.
Well, you're a hitchophile, if you will. Is that correct?
Hitchophilia, I think, is the phrase.
A hitchophiliac? I think we can all agree on that. Do you like Alfred Hitchcock? I was setting you up. Sweet Jesus.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Anyway.
His version is definitely better than Thrombama from the Train.
Does Kim Grist appear in The Birds? That's all I need to know. All America needs to know.
No. Melody Griffith's mommy, isn't it?
Tippi Hedren. You can watch The Birds on the Peacock channel. Do you have that?
Shit. No, I had to subscribe for my 7-day free trial to watch our last movie. And now they're not going to give me another free thing.
Very upsetting. Otherwise, you'll have to pay full freight on some other channel. Prime Video, Apple, Amazon. Who's to say?
I still have terrestrial TV, so it could be on my DVR from 6 years ago. So
check it out. You'll thank me later, or you'll curse my name. One of the two things will happen. So thank you very much, and be well.
Later, skaters.